Last time we looked at that busy year of refurbishment with improving the Ford Jurneer and increasing its speed and all the new equipment and all it was delivered to the mill. And at the end of that year with all of those accomplishments, Anselm Bossert, remember that Blandin had retained him as the manager of the mill, certainly needing to rely on him for his knowledge of it. But at the end of that year, Anselm Bossert resigned as manager of the Itasca Paper Company. The last months of his papermaking career were difficult for him. He no longer held either the authority he had enjoyed as a part owner of the mill or the freedom of management allowed by Frank Becker and Luther Lindauer in Kaukauna. Everyone who worked for Charles Blandin found him demanding, and Bossert undoubtedly felt the pressure of Blandin's far-reaching aspirations for the mill. Plant Superintendent Louis Jurgensen, remember, he's this remarkable person who had such a feel for the Ford Jurneer machine and who kept it running and was responsible to see that it was doing its job, and he had done that admirably. And he had also retained his position after 1916. But several years later, he suffered a series of strokes and died at the age of 45. His son Harvey, and we've encountered Harvey before, after he'd learned everything he could from his father, he had decided that he was going to go and work in International Falls, thinking he would have a better career there. But now he is asked to return to Grand Rapids and to take over his father's work, and he did agree to do that. Bossert wandered into the mill one day looking for old friends, and in the course of conversation with Harvey, he remarked, "You know, if we'd kept this mill, your dad would still be living." Little tinge of bitterness there, and thoughts of all that pressure that were brought to bear by the new owners. Harvey recalled that when Bossert visited the mill after his retirement, he always avoided the front office and the new managerial staff. But despite any tension between the new president and the manager, Blandin was warm and effusive in acknowledging Bossert's resignation. Blandin wrote, "I feel under personal obligation to you for the sincere efforts you have made to cooperate with us since the purchase of the paper mill in handling the affairs of the company. I also have the highest admiration for your sterling qualities and the honesty with which you have looked after our interests." Blandin requested permission to call on Bossert for advice in the future, saying, "You undoubtedly know the plant better than anyone else, and your good judgment and sensible ideas can be of benefit to us as time goes on." In a rather fatherly fashion, Blandin wrote that he felt Bossert's decision to retire was for your own best interests and that you are acting with wisdom and are entitled to a playtime in your life. When Bossert died in 1930, Blandin wrote to Caroline, his widow, "There will always be something lacking among Grand Rapids people with his absence, which the writer will keenly feel. I wish I could express something in the way of consolation to you, but words are inadequate. I do want you to feel, however, that his passing is not only a personal loss, but one that the whole community must feel, and that he cannot be replaced by another." Well, despite those strong sentiments, Bossert's contribution to the paper company was not always acknowledged in later years. Blandin, for example, reflecting on the company's history in 1945, so that's 30 years after he'd purchased the mill, he referred to the 1916 plant as not much of a mill anymore. And that isn't the case at all. That is not a fair assessment. And Blandin did not correct employees when they referred to the mill during its early years as a haywire outfit. And that certainly is unfair. They're referring there to Jurgensen's ability to do those repairs that were needed by the machine using local materials and what was on hand. And he did it well. Remember, he had gotten the patent for an improvement that reduced wear on the wire. That's the wire that the paper flowed out on as the sheet was formed. And that improvement that he devised was purchased by every manufacturer of Ford Jurneer paper machines and incorporated into them. This guy really knew what he was doing. So no, this isn't a haywire outfit. Others later associated with the paper company, and evidently they were just picking up on some of these earlier comments, and they repeated such interpretations. a 1978 company report. Now we're 20 years after Blandin's death. But a 1978 company report, including historical background on the mill, totally unfairly states that from 1902 to 1916, the Itasca mill was plagued by bad management. No, not so at all. As we've seen, that just simply is not the case. Much more appropriate is the Herald Review's assessment at the time of Bossert's resignation. Its story summarized Bossert's business career and contributions to Grand Rapids, calling him a man of foresight, and it pointed out that one of the terms of the sale was that Mr. Bossert remain with the plant long enough to acquaint the new management with its intricacies because of his intimate knowledge of the mill operation. I was just kind of sorry to see that those criticisms had crept into later Blandin stuff and had simply gone uncorrected and unchecked. But no, once again, Bossert certainly was the right manager and a very good manager for the Itasca Paper Company. Well, Blandin chose Carl Kirkwood Andrews to replace Bossert as manager of the Itasca Paper Company. Now he signed his name C. Kirk Andrews, and here we meet another of the major figures of Grand Rapids history. With that appointment, the Grand Rapids mill was again in the hands of an individual without papermaking experience, but Andrews was about to enter into more than a half-century association with the paper company, and it wouldn't be all that long before he came to be known in Grand Rapids as Mr. Paper Mill. So we certainly have a very competent person to replace Bossert. The new manager was born in Pennsylvania in 1889. He attended schools in the East and then moved to St. Paul in 1910. There, Andrews worked as a bookkeeper for the Dispatch Printing Company, the beginning of his long career in Blandin's employ. Initially, Andrews' appointment was not particularly well received by the experienced papermakers at the mill, but the very determined, hard-driving Andrews assiduously set about learning all aspects of the mill operation. Oh, he made mistakes, as when he once turned off the valve of some machine room steam pipes that appeared to be doing no more than wasting heat in the sealing area. Soon, moisture from the dryers on the Fourdrinier began to collect on the cooled-down ceiling, causing a shower in the machine room. A disgruntled supervisor opened the closed valves, and the rain stopped with only slight damage to the paper. But such errors were few, and Andrews gradually won the respect of the employees as his ability and managerial skills became apparent. As a part of Andrews' learning experience, Blandin sent him on a number of inspection tours to other paper mills in Wisconsin and Minnesota. Andrews observed operations at the different mills, looking for insight into papermaking procedures and seeking ideas for use in Grand Rapids. After one such expedition to Wisconsin, Andrews indicated that he was quite pleased with the Itasca operation. He told a Herald Review reporter that he'd found other mills, as a rule, no better equipped than the one in Grand Rapids, and he observed that oftentimes machinery in the older papermaking districts was antiquated and not as impressive as the mill in Grand Rapids. Under the direction of Andrews and with the continued financial backing of the Dispatch Printing Company, still more refurbishment took place at the plant in 1918. A few finishing touches were given to the major improvements of 1917, and then several significant changes were made. Two more pocket grinders were added to the machinery inventory to increase pulp production, and a slasher was installed in the woodroom to facilitate cutting the pulp logs. Most importantly, the mill added a new efficient cylindrical screening system that retrieved about a ton of splinters and wood scraps lost daily with the old flat screens. Now those too could be dried and used for boiler fuel. The administrative area was remodeled to provide an office for Andrews and better lighting and space for the managerial staff. When Blandin visited Grand Rapids at the end of Andrews' first year as manager, he stated, "Things are in very good shape here, and present conditions speak well for the management." He was right on that, and the paper mill is continuing to look very good to the residents of Grand Rapids.